This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
There are some year-end traditions that we all look forward to, and one of mine is looking back over the last 12 months and listening again to some of what we feel were the best stories we got to tell. Like this one. For years, the cable network C-SPAN has toured the country in a well-equipped bus visiting schools, book fairs, and state capitals.
We are traveling around the country just to talk about C-SPAN, to meet with students and people in the community, and promote our nonpartisan resources.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll retake our tour of the C-SPAN bus. Then it's our conversation with a university librarian about what they're doing to teach students how to recognize false information. You know, fake news. And we'll spend an academic minute with teens and caffeine, because what could possibly go wrong there? I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Have you ever wondered what C-SPAN stands for? Well, last winter, the students at Ferry Pass Middle School in Pensacola nailed it. These students were taking a tour of the C-SPAN bus, an oversized, technology-filled motor coach, visiting state capitals, book fairs, and schools along the way. Janae Green is a C-SPAN representative who gives tours to students, as well as, you know, the stray education reporter on the bus.
We launched the bus in September and started in Delaware, and we finished November 2018. And we were in Baton Rouge earlier this week, and we're making our way to Florida. We'll do a couple of book festivals and then on to Tallahassee. So we're going to all 50 states, including Alaska and Hawaii, which everyone always gets really excited about. And we are traveling around the country just to talk about C-SPAN, to meet with students and people in the community, and promote our nonpartisan resources, as well as our competition that we have right now that's called Student Cam.
And we'll tell you about that competition in a minute. But first, they take the bus to Hawaii?
That's probably the biggest question right now. We basically put it on a barge, and we ship it out to Hawaii for a few days, and then once we have it there, we'll do events all around Hawaii. So
I was kidding. I didn't think you actually got it to
Hawaii. Oh, we do. This bus that you're standing on, we will be in Hawaii. So we only have one bus that's traveling, and it goes to all 50 states, including Alaska and Hawaii. So we will have it there, and we'll do live programming from our bus. The back of the bus can be turned into a mobile production studio, and so we'll have them back there, and we'll do live programming with our Washington Journal morning show every morning, especially when we're in the Capitol. We'll definitely do it where we're at the Capitol cities. And so it's a great opportunity to not only have the bus around, but to get live programming from Hawaii or Alaska or Tallahassee, whatever capital that we are in.
C-SPAN is operated by a nonprofit company called the National Cable Satellite Corporation and is funded by cable and satellite companies and other providers through subscriber fees. It gets no government money. During the bus's cross-country tour, they work with cable companies to determine which cities and schools will make good places to stop and visit. The bus stop in Pensacola was in collaboration with Cox Communications.
We are created by the cable industry as a public service, and so we let them know that we're on the tour. We're coming to Pensacola because they were here, and we definitely like to reach out and work with our local affiliates when we're in the area. And they chose the schools for us to come to and partner with. And so we were at Home Elementary School this morning. We were at Workman Middle a few hours ago, and now we're here at Ferry Pass Middle School, and we're just incredibly excited and incredibly thankful to Cox Communications for having us here in Pensacola.
Welcome to the C-SPAN bus. This is our mobile studio and mobile classroom. My name is Doug Hemig, and I work for C-SPAN. I have the privilege of working on the C-SPAN bus year-round. So it's our outreach vehicle, and it's our studio. We actually do programming, live TV shows from the C-SPAN bus. And we also talk to students about all of our educational content, students and teachers.
So Doug Hemig is a marketing and community relations representative for C-SPAN and also gives tours on the bus. I asked him what students this age want to know when they take that tour.
Middle school students are great. A lot of times they're really excited about the technology and the bus, the bells and whistles of the bus, you know, the cameras, the lighting, all the tablets. So that's the main thing for middle school students. But we use that as an opportunity to get them engaged about all the educational content that we have in our network.
How often are students in middle school familiar with C-SPAN?
You know, you'd be surprised. A lot of them, their parents watch C-SPAN, or their teachers who are big fans of C-SPAN, who request the bus to come out to the schools, you know, prep them. And so they know, they have a decent knowledge about our network and why we do what we do.
We're middle school now. I'm sure you deal with older students. I imagine that's a different experience.
It is, and it's with the older students, we actually go into the content a little bit more. In our presentation on the back of the couch area of our C-SPAN bus, we can actually go into the nitty-gritty of the politics a little bit more than we do with middle school students.
How is that more of a give and take with them, or are you just giving a lot?
Well, it depends on the audience. It's very organic. They come up with questions, and we just kind of roll with it. But the main idea of the whole bus is, and all of our presentations, is to kind of create show them a resource that maybe they hadn't considered before. So they walk away with something they can use not only in the classroom, but especially with the high schoolers when they get ready to vote.
You're in school right now. I understand you do a lot of book fairs, too, around the country.
We do. Book TV, it's 48 hours of nonfiction authors. So we cover a lot of authors, readings, panel sessions, in-depth book reviews, you name it. We cover that on Book TV.
And when you're at a book fair, is it the same thing, just bringing people in to take tours?
Well, it depends. A lot of times we have a separate set, or we'll be in the auditorium, and we'll have a separate C-SPAN crew actually taking the cameras inside the buildings, and the bus will be used outside.
Both Doug Hemmig and Janae Green engaged the students on the tour, both in the back of the bus studio and in the front, where about a dozen tablets are set up along the walls of the bus for students to get more information about government and C-SPAN, and to take a quiz about government, which I have to admit was a bit challenging. Hemmig, who has been with C-SPAN for 17 years, says this bus is a major upgrade from previous models.
You know, we're learning. We're learning each time. This is much more of an open concept, more tablets, more room for the kids to explore. So each one gets better and better.
This is one of our most high-tech buses. We have 11 mobile tablets up front. And so on the bus, we have our mobile app where you can go on there. You can watch videos in each category, whether it's Congress, the Supreme Court, White House, our signature programming like the Washington Journal, or even Book TV and American History TV. There's also a quiz up here, but it allows students to go on. You're watching quick videos. You're getting information right to you. And then if you're interested, you can email it to yourself. So not only can you watch the video really quickly, but it emails it to you so you have it at home, and it allows you to watch the full program right there. Also, some technology that we have on the bus, our selfie station, so you can take a selfie with a C-SPAN mic in the background of the White House or of Congress or any part of D.C. And then we have a 360 camera, and that is one of our newest things. If you tap on the screen and drag across, whatever setting it's in, whether it's the White House press briefing room or a congressional hearing or a parade or a march in D.C., if you drag across, you can see the 360 view of what it was like to be there, as if you're standing right there in the middle of that congressional hearing. So it's a great opportunity for students to see. And then, of course, technology-wise in our bus, we have the back that we transform to that production studio. And so we'll hang lights up top. We have two cameras there. And we also have a mini control room in the back that allows us to have the transmission and hook up the cameras and everything to make sure that we can show what's happening right on the bus directly back home in Washington, D.C. on C-SPAN.
Let me ask you a question. Where do you guys go to get your news and information? As middle school students, right, where do you guys go to get your news?
I get it from the newspaper.
Newspaper? Okay, what else?
CNN.
CNN? Okay. Where else?
We have this thing called...
Now, none of the students during the tour mentioned C-SPAN when they were asked where they get their news. Janae Green says part of what they do is teach students how to use C-SPAN.
We always ask, have you heard of C-SPAN before? And we get a couple hands that raise, and then I talk to them, okay, have you scrolled through the television and seen Congress on TV? And they're like, oh yeah, I've seen that. And I said, well, guess what? There's a great chance that was C-SPAN. And so we let them come on, whether we're showing them our mobile app on the bus and the video, so they can watch some of C-SPAN's content and start to see a little bit of what C-SPAN covers, whether it's the House when it's in session, the Senate when it's in session, or anything that's happening that's public policy related. We let them watch videos and start to see that these are things that you're learning in class that you can watch at home as well. And so it's a great opportunity for them to not only know that, yes, we are on TV, but everyone has their cell phones and their mobile devices these days, and you can go right on our website, cspan.org, and watch all of our, or almost all of our content up there. Currently, we have over 235,000 hours of documented video, and there's a ticker up there that it always goes up, so I add in counting, because basically once something airs live on C-SPAN, it's on our website, so you can watch it directly after, and the students just love seeing that and learning, oh, C-SPAN's out there for me, It's a different way to get your news, to be informed. It's long format programming, so we don't just show you the highlights and tell you what's happening and what to think about it, but we put it out there and let you watch it from the time someone steps in the room until the time someone exits the room, and really make your own informed decisions on what you saw right there on C-SPAN.
And remember earlier when we told you about that student cam competition that C-SPAN is running?
And what that is a video documentary competition for students. It allows them to get their voice out 5 to 7 minutes. They'll use some of C-SPAN's content from our video library. It has over 235,000 hours of documented video, so it's a great resource for students to use in and outside of the classroom. They can put that in their video for the competition, interview an elected official or someone who relates to it. The topic this year is the Constitution and you. So any part of the Constitution that you find important or find interesting, tell us why and why it's important to you and submit it. And grand prize is $5,000, and then it goes all the way down to $250 cash. And so we really encourage them to get their voices out and to think critically about issues that are currently affecting them and that are constitutional things.
The C-SPAN Student Cam Competition is open to students starting in middle school.
6th through 12th graders. So if you're in 6th grade, you can do it every year until you're a 12th grader. But the catch is, which is actually a better chance for you to win, middle school competes against middle school and high school against high school. So you're competing against students on your grade level and also in your region. So there's a great chance for you to win. We give over $100,000 in cash prizes, and we have about 150 winners. So we really do spread the wealth. And if you win, you can have either the bus or someone from C-SPAN come back to your school. We'll either print out a big check or get you a certificate, host a big assembly for you, invite elected officials out and press, and really celebrate you, because the students deserve it and they put so much work in and they really are celebrated when we come back in town.
You can learn more about the Student Cam competition on the special website, studentcam.org. Still to come, a college librarian is trying to teach students how to recognize fake from fact. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. So what's being done in schools to teach students about recognizing facts from fiction? Probably not enough, but some institutions are beginning to recognize how important that can be and are giving it a shot. James Daugherty is the Information Literacy Instruction Coordinator and the STEM Librarian at the University of West Florida. And while she really doesn't like the term fake news, she's been running some seminars on campus to give students the tools to tell what's real from what's, well, not quite so real. Back in late spring, I asked her how much we really trust what we see and read.
We trust everything that we see and read. We trust every tweet. We trust every Facebook post. We believe it with all of our hearts. We trust every GIF, everything that's on Reddit. Yes. So that's what I approach people with, like that, you know, armed with, okay, this is where they are. Now maybe we can make some progress from there.
Is it just the things we agree with we trust, or is it go the other way too?
Mostly we agree. Yeah, cognitive bias rules us, and that just means that we only allow things in our bubble, and we really just believe things that agree with us and that make us feel good.
So how do you attack that mindset at the beginning?
The first thing that I say or try to work with students on is presenting a piece of media, whatever that may be, and asking them, and not necessarily, usually not political whatsoever, but asking them what they know about the author, what they know about the publication, and in reading it, and this is going to be something short, in reading it, why someone might want to write that. So those are questions that aren't very intimidating. You can usually find them, and they're the start of this analytical thinking that needs to be applied, and it can just become rote. But this analytical thinking that can be applied to media that's out there, the media that's constantly coming in, everything.
When you show them that, is it something that you know to be incorrect?
Not necessarily. I could do two correct things and one incorrect thing. It could be, you know, incorrect altogether. It could be partially incorrect. And we can talk about the ways that those things interplay.
As we grow up, and, you know, some of us grew up with newspapers, some of us grow up now with the news online, are we just conditioned to believe it all?
I think that we are, because now we're working with a group of digital natives now, and they're fully entrenched not only in the universities but also in workplaces, you know, from top to bottom at this point. But I think that those of us who did make the transition from print material to digital material, as far as news is concerned, yes, we have been conditioned, because our local newspaper told us things that we needed to know and that turned out to be mostly accurate. And so why wouldn't the same kind of media, something that looks like that, not even necessarily the website for your local newspaper, which may or may not exist at this point, look at something and expect the kind of veracity, expect to be able to trust that information in just the same way. And that makes it very difficult.
So once you show people that you're teaching this little piece of media, where do you go from there? Is it just teaching them to investigate on their own?
It is. And, you know, hoping and encouraging and continuing. It's got to be a continuous process. That's the thing. And unfortunately, I often only hit a group of people once. Not often do I get that multiple encounters, because it does require multiple encounters with somebody or something encouraging you to look at something more deeply. And these are the things that you can look at more deeply, because looking at who the author is, looking at the potential motivations for writing, for this particular piece of writing, looking at source, that kind of thing, that only takes you so far, honestly, because you can scratch the surface with that, and then, you know, all three of those concepts are icebergs. So you have to get to the bottom of it. It takes practice. It does. And it takes being very aware.
As a STEM librarian, do you find that people who are in those fields are more apt to be a little more skeptical and investigative?
No. I mean, not students at the undergrad level, not the general public. I actually have a background in public library, so I've worked with the public a lot, and they're awesome and highly intelligent, but you just want to believe what makes you feel good and what makes you feel comfortable, and that, you know, engineers and English majors all feel the same way.
So when somebody leaves you for the final time, what do you hope they get out of it?
I hope that they don't believe every tweet, maybe just every other tweet. They do a little bit of investigation and question if they're very excited about something and it seems like a breakthrough. Something like that. They read something and it's like, yes, this is amazing. And they step back and question that and say, wait a second. Is this too good to be true? Where did this come from? Who wrote this? Where was it published? When was it published? Start asking questions like that. If they do that 1 out of every 10 times, oh my gosh. I'm thrilled.
Given the media landscape, is it only going to get worse?
It's definitely going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know what's going to happen next. I think that We are poised in a very interesting place, though, because I think that, like I said, it will get worse, and then it will get better because it has to. And there's another fallacy out there that we, you know, there was, oh, back in the good old days, the newspapers reported only true things, and that's not true. The golden age of reporting and trying to tell the truth with what you reported is just been like the past 100-150 years or so. So we're just cycling back around to madness, even in political reporting and things like that. So I can't predict where it's going to go. I think that you're going to have, though, increasingly more control over what comes into you and what you ingest, and therefore you're able to build up that wall of the happy news that makes you feel good, and it doesn't matter whether or not it's true or accurate or helpful. That's the other thing I worry about, harmful information just being believed because it's one place or another.
Jane Daugherty is the Information Literacy Instruction Coordinator and the STEM Librarian at the University of West Florida in Pensacola. What's worse, young people drinking a lot of caffeine or the reasons that they're doing it? That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Is caffeine bad for teens? I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Allison Bryant-Ludden, associate professor of psychology at the College of the Holy Cross, says the reasons behind caffeine use may be a bigger issue.
Everyone drinks coffee. What's the big deal? Well, when everyone includes adolescents, there's reason for concern. With the introduction of energy drinks and the rise of coffee shops in the past 15 years, the consumption of caffeine has become more and more popular among young people. The physiological effects of these beverages are worrisome. Energy drinks and coffee beverages contain 5, sometimes up to 10, times the amount of caffeine found in a can of Coke. But as important is why more and more adolescents are drinking caffeine and how their reasons for using caffeine suggest a potentially problematic pattern of using caffeine to meet the social and psychological demands of their environment. In my focus groups and survey research involving high school students, teens talk about using caffeine in the same way they talk about other substances like alcohol. They self-medicate using caffeine to get through their day, and they use it to help socialize with peers. Teens revealed that they use energy drinks to help study for tests and that carrying an iced coffee yields social status in high school hallways. This expands the notion that adolescents are drinking caffeine just for the stimulant effects. It has a bit of edginess, of exclusivity, and of risk-taking if their parents were to find out. Companies reinforce this idea through advertising that targets kids. Energy drinks like Monster sponsor sporting events, while coffee companies use flavors such as Oreo to make their highly caffeinated products appealing to a younger clientele. So why is this an issue? Because the behaviors you form in adolescence stick with you. If kids are establishing habits of self-medication and socializing using substances, it's likely that the reasons they provide for using caffeine are going to be the same reasons they provide for using the next substance they experiment with, such as alcohol or other drugs.
That was Allison Bryant-Ludden of the College of the Holy Cross. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at @TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content.
Hear more at WAMC.org.